was presenting Krishna's philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. And sometimes I would be speaking to a large audience of brand new people, introducing them to the Bhagavad Gita. And again, I would notice anger. Sometimes my face would flush red as I was presenting Krishna consciousness. Or when it would come to the questions and answers and some discussion would ensue, and I would notice my face would become red sometimes and I would respond with anger. And I started to reflect on it. Where is that coming from? What is that about? Why am I angry? And should I not be sharing Krishna consciousness with love and compassion? And leading other devotees. I was traveling in the Namhadas. I had a responsibility to lead them, but I would be angry that they weren't following. But to lead with love and compassion and to appreciate what service they do and the chanting that they do. And so I started to pray to Krishna for compassion. And it was my daily prayer, many times daily prayer, that I could nurture and cultivate compassion. So that's what prompted me, what got me meditating on this. I don't know about you. You may have experienced other preachers preaching to you with anger. And maybe as they preach, rather than feeling inspired and encouraged and empowered, you might feel guilty or fearful or resentful, uninspired, unenthused. And sometimes devotees become so uninspired and unenthused that they go away because it's too much for them to carry. Too much for them to carry that burden, that weight of guilt and fear. And it sends them away from Krishna. So I don't know if any of you have experiences like that. I was reflecting on this Kuli Mela, where we are right now. And I was reflecting how my own generation, the children that were in our first group here at Yuvashana or in Yugovardhan, other schools of the Hare Krishna movement, they're not really here. And they're not here because they're not really connected so much with the Hare Krishna movement. Maybe there's something internal, but for a lot of them, they didn't experience much compassion as they were growing up or as they transitioned to their teenage years and then to adulthood. And how, so it's mainly the next lot, the next group, the younger. I'm generalizing. There are others like me. I do have other peers that are also wonderful, practicing Krishna consciousness in their different ways. But for many of them, there was not a lot of compassion and understanding as they grew up. And I think by the time the next generations came along, the younger groups, parents had matured some more, teachers had matured some more, gurus had matured some more, the society as a whole had matured some more, that those young Vaishnavas could be accommodated and appreciated even if they didn't have, freshly shaven heads or, they weren't wearing Vaishnava tilak or whatever they listened to or whatever, they were still appreciated as being valuable, important members of the community, and they were encouraged to participate as they are here in this Kuli Mela. So probably 10 or 15 years ago, what we have here, probably it wouldn't have been possible. It would have been considered too much of a deviation. There was a very, very strict, rigid standard of how Krishna consciousness needs to be practiced and taught, and anyone that didn't meet that bar were excluded or made to feel very lowly and unqualified for Krishna's mercy. So Yeah, so that was reinforcing. But as I was reflecting on that, it was reinforcing for me the need for a compassionate presentation of Krishna consciousness, application in our own lives to understand Krishna consciousness and teach it and share it and live it compassionately. An angry presentation of Krishna consciousness, one that is very exclusive and dismissive of others, it is actually antithetical to what we have described as the quality of a Vaishnava. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that bhakti and compassion, they go together. Bhakti, compassion is a natural manifestation or expression of bhakti, of devotion. So many of our songs, our prayers, the Vaishnava, the standout quality of the Vaishnava is their compassion. Vancha kalpataru bhyascha kripa sindhu. So kripa sindhu, here we have an ocean. The Vaishnava is described as an ocean of compassion. And when we Kaviraj Goswami lists the 26 qualities of a devotee, compassion appears twice in that list. Different, you know, aspects of compassion, but the first quality that Chakravarti Thakur describes is kripalu. Kripalu, akrita droha, they're compassionate, they're free of a tendency to criticize or fault find. Satyasara, they are equal to all. Satyasara, oceans of compassion, of truthfulness, and they're equal to all, and so on and so forth. And then very near to the end of the list, Kaviraj Goswami, Nirdosha, Vedanta Midu, Sukhi, Akinchina, Sava, Pakaraka, Sada, Krishna, Kasharan. Karuna, Gambira, Karuna, Maitra, Kavi Daksha Moni. So he starts his list with compassion, and then very near to the end, Gambira, Karuna, Maitra. They are very deep, they are Karuna, they are very kind. Thank you, Prabhu, for your kindness. Kavi Daksha, they are expert, Moni. Different aspects of compassion, they appear twice in Krishnadas Kaviraj's list in describing the qualities of a devotee. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described with names like Karuna Avatar and Karuna Sindhu, the incarnation of compassion, the ocean of compassion. And it is a quality of Sri Krishna as well. Krishna's compassion is expressed to the Brajbasis when the residents of Vrindavan drunk the Yamuna river water. They fell down unconscious and Krishna revived them with a compassionate glance. But then, the amazing thing was that with Kaliya, later on, Krishna also was compassionate towards Kaliya himself. So he was compassionate towards he felt compassion for his devotees who were, you know, unconscious, having drunk poison. And he felt compassion for the perpetrator of that offense, Kaliya. Krishna feels compassion for Sri Radha. Sometimes we might think compassion is only for fallen. You have compassion for fallen and lowly people. Krishna feels compassion for Radha because she feels so much pain and separation from him. And seeing Srimati Radharani burning in a fire of separation, Krishna is forced to come back to her and embrace her to relieve her, to relieve the pain in her body. Krishna expresses his compassion with his kind words, but also to his devotees in Vrindavan, but also to the people in this world. Our acharyas explain how Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita is an expression of his compassion. And Krishna himself said it. He said, out of compassion, Bhagavad Gita 10:12, I think, shining with the lamp of knowledge, I enter into their hearts to destroy the ignorance that pervades there, the darkness of ignorance that pervades there. Our acharyas explain how Krishna expands himself as different incarnations coming into this world out of compassion. So those are examples of Krishna's compassion for his devotees in Vrindavan, for us here in this world. He manifests as Sri Guru, as the spiritual master. That is also his compassion. Sri Guru Karuna Sindhu Adharma Janara Bandhu. The spiritual master here is described as the ocean, again, ocean of compassion. So those are the ways that, some of the ways, Krishna expresses his compassion. But even the devotees in Vrindavan, they have compassion for Krishna. When Krishna was, back to Kaliya, that pastime, when Krishna was in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, it is described that the devotees felt great compassion for Krishna. How beautiful. So compassion is, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, is it non-different from bhakti? He says it is a quality of the soul. Other qualities that we have in this material world, anger, jealousy, and all of that, those are conditioned qualities. But compassion, as we clear away the conditioning, compassion is a quality of the soul that becomes more and more prominent in the devotee. The devotees in Vrindavan themselves express compassion for Krishna. Mother Yasoda feels compassion for Krishna, seeing his feet, that he walks on hard stones and sticks and so on. And when Krishna entered into Mathura to wrestle Chanura and Mushtika at the invitation of Kamsa, it is described that the Mathurabasis were looking from the windows or the street, and they were looking at Krishna and thinking, so beautiful, so wonderful. And they were feeling so much compassion for Krishna. He's going now to fight with these great wrestlers. And this has all been set up by Kamsa. So they felt great compassion in their hearts. It's described that in the wrestling arena, there are all different types of...
The wrestling arena.
Yeah, we might need to ask somebody to ask them to move or to... It is described that in the wrestling arena itself, different devotees, based on their relationship, they looked at Krishna and they felt different types of emotion. So, some people, they saw Krishna and they felt fear. Yeah, the evil kings, they felt fear. Some saw Krishna and they felt chivalry. The wrestlers, they're like, yeah, let's have a good fight. Some saw Krishna and they felt conjugal feelings. The girls, they saw Krishna as the most handsome, most beautiful person, and they felt a conjugal feeling in their heart. Some saw Krishna, the elderly people, they saw Krishna and they felt compassion. This little boy, he's so small. How can Kamsa be sending this little boy to his death in wrestling with these very powerful wrestlers? So like this, compassion is a very important part of Krishna's rasa, Krishna's relationships with his devotees in Vrindavan. And Bhaktivinoda emphasizes, as bhakti becomes more prominent in the heart, this quality of the devotee, compassion becomes more and more prominent. So, now we come to this problem. The problem that I introduced at the very beginning of our discussion, that although compassion is such an important quality of a Vaishnava, sometimes it appears that devotees can be quite compassionless. They can be a bit hard and dismissive of altruistic attempts or endeavors. Prabhupada would talk about the drowning man. Yeah, the drowning man. You've seen the play, you've heard the story. Yasuo used to do it all the time. You know, someone floundering, making a scene during the Sunday feast. Everyone runs out, what's going on? Devotee yells out, I'm a social worker. They swim out to save him. They bring back his coat. And the person says, that's not my husband or my boyfriend or my friend or whatever it was. That's just their coat. And then the devotee gives the explanation. Yes, social welfare, social work, if it just deals with the body, it's just like saving the person's coat, leaving the person to drown. So devotees can be quite dismissive. That's Prabhupada's own example. Devotees can be quite dismissive of mundane philanthropy. And therefore we can be quite indifferent to the suffering of others in that sense. And we can think of our own preaching work as compassion and any other endeavor as useless. Blowing on a boil, that's another example that we give. And yet, when we do our preaching, we can do it quite heartlessly sometimes. Like banging people over a head with philosophy. And with our own devotees, we can also bang them over their heads and make them feel very guilty and fearful and resentful. So this is a little bit of a paradox. And then we have Prabhupada's, you know, although Prabhupada would criticize these social welfare workers or the philanthropists, we also have examples of when he saw people in Mayapur looking through the garbage. And Prabhupada asked the devotee, why are they going through the garbage? And the devotee said, they're hungry. They're looking for some food from the, you know, if someone's thrown away their leaf plate and there's some food left, they want to eat something. Prabhupada started to cry. The devotee saw tears in Prabhupada's eyes and he instructed the devotees, what's the famous quote?
Hungry within 10 miles of any temple.
Yeah. No one within a 10-mile radius of our temple should ever go hungry. And then you have devotees criticizing that program as well, Food for Life, Crumbs for Bums, and so on. You may have heard that criticism or not. Mundane social, you know, work, mundane philanthropy. Have you heard those?
Critical of that type of work.
Yeah, prasadam, well, food distribution, Food for Life. When you look at the Prabhupada centennial brochure that was made by the BBT, Food for Life is conspicuously absent from that presentation. And that was the reason, because of that debate. It wasn't, anyway.
Yep.
So these are the... Devotees can be quite conflicted. That's the point I'm trying to make. We have a very high ideal of compassion. It's there in Krishna's pastimes. It's glorified as the standout quality of a Vaishnava. And at the same time, we can be quite conflicted when it comes to helping other people. Maybe you've been approached by beggars on your parikrama, your visit to India, in Delhi or Bombay or even Vrindavan. Beggars might approach you, and you might be, devotees can sometimes be reticent to give something. What's the problem there? Why would we not want to give them something? What? Okay, a lot more are going to come. It's a good idea. Yeah, that could be a good reason to be hesitant to give. They could be professional beggars. Sure. They could use it for sinful activity. So devotees can be very hesitant to give to beggars because they might use that contribution even directly or indirectly. Yeah, so maybe they will eat food, but then with the strength they get from the food, they will go and engage in, you know, sinful activity.
They work in teams, so then they're bound by the person who gets most of that money in the poverty. They're bound by the poverty.
Right. Yeah, and have you heard the argument about interfering with another person's karma? Yeah, so even an animal that might be in distress, devotees can be hesitant to give some support there, because now you're caught up in their karma. And have you heard that before? No? Yeah, it's a common. Who's heard that concern? Yeah? If you help out, you know, a little bug or you know, or whatever it is, now you're getting implicated in their karma. What? Very good. Yeah, so what about Bharat Maharaj?
You remember he became Panagarh Peer, who was one of his. And he was very Krishna conscious, but because of that compassion, he had to go down and become a deer next life.
Yeah. So compassion can be a problem, and so devotees are afraid of it, actually. Devotees can be afraid of it. Although it's the standout quality of the Vaishnava, we have the example of Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj got... See, you know, how is Maya going to come to an advanced devotee like Bharat Maharaj? Money. He renounced the whole world. So that's not going to get him. Whatever, you know, intoxication, gambling. No way. That's no allure to him at all. But a suffering, you know, poor, incapable little animal... pull at Bharat Maharaj's natural Vaishnava compassion. And Bharat Maharaj ended up taking the long way around to get him back to Godhead. Took the deviation. Very good example. Any other examples? Yeah. Right. What was his name? King Nriga. King Nriga gave charity to one brahmana. Well, he was giving charity to many brahmanas, thousands and thousands of cows, and one of those brahmanas from... one of the cows from one of the brahmanas that had been already been given by Sringi, Nriga, went to the herd of cows that had not yet been given in charity, and King Nriga gave the cow twice. And then the two Brahmins were arguing, that's my cow, no, it's mine, the king gave it to me, no, the king gave it to me. And and they couldn't, you know, resolve the conflict. There was, you know, no mediation available. And they cursed King Nriga. Well, no, they didn't curse him. Did they curse him? It was Yamaraj himself who gave the punishment. When King Nriga... you know, ended his days, Yamaraj said, okay, there's good news and bad news. Which one do you want first? The good news is you have been so pious, so charitable, you have so much, you know, material prosperity awaiting you. The bad news is, this is what happened. You gave a cow away twice, and you have to live as a lizard in the bottom of a well for hundreds of years. But he also got the benediction that Krishna will save you. So Krishna, you know the story. Krishna, the boys were playing, Krishna's children, I believe, were playing in the around Dwarka in the forest. They lost their ball inside the well. They went to get it out and they saw a massive lizard down there. They asked Krishna to help them out, and Krishna reached in, pulled out the lizard, and that lizard became a Gandharva or a demigod. Okay, that's another example. We have Bharat Maharaj as an example. There's another really classic example where compassion bewilders a devotee. Huh?
A clue.
It's one of our main. It's the main book in the Hare Krishna movement. Arjuna. Arjuna. Krishna asks Arjuna, how has this impurity come upon you? Arjuna is so full of compassion. His eyes are brimming with tears. His bow has slipped from his hand. And he's told Krishna that he won't fight. And Krishna chastises him. This is is an impotence, impurity. It's not befitting someone of you, O Bharata. Someone befitting of, you know, someone of your lineage. There's another example of a Sobari Muni. Sobari Muni, sometimes in Australia we say Subari, Sobari Muni. Sobari Muni was performing austerities. Such a great tapasvi, he did penance and austerities at the bottom of the Yamuna River for thousands of years, 10,000 years ultimately. But there was an incident with him. Yeah, he ended up falling down. And why he fell down was because of an offense he made to Garuda. And that offense was that Garuda used to come and fish. Garuda's a great devotee. Yeah, how about that for your for our stereotypes? Here's a great devotee who eats fish. Garuda's a great devotee of Krishna. Doesn't, he's not a vegetarian, eats fish. And while fishing one day, Sobari Muni, out of compassion for the fish, told Garuda he shouldn't be doing that. And cursed Garuda. If he ever came to that spot again, he would die. A great Vaishnava aparad Sobari Muni made out of compassion. And our acharyas make that point. Our acharyas make that point. Out of compassion for the fish, Sobari Muni cursed Garuda. And so later on, Garuda was, you know, harassing Kaliya. And Kaliya knew there's one spot where Garuda can't come. If Garuda comes to this spot by the Yamuna River where Sobari, you know, had his ashram, where Garuda cannot, then he should die according to that curse. So Kali went and set up residence there and poisoned the whole Yamuna River to the extent that when a bird flew over the river, they would fall out of the sky dead. What happened to Sobari is that while meditating, after 10,000 years, he happened to see some of those fish that he had protected engaged in sex underwater, as fish would do. And that bewildered Sobari's mind, got out of the river, went, you know, to the nearest city, met the king. I want to get married. I would like to marry your daughters. And Sobari, the king said, which one? He had 50. He asked Sobari, which daughter do you want? And he was like, I want all of them. And he ended up marrying 50 princesses and getting quite distracted from his spiritual practices for a while. So those are some examples for us of how compassion can be a distraction for a transcendentalist. And it's one reason why. One reason why devotees can be quite conflicted about engaging compassionately to other living entities. We discussed, you know, the animal suffering. Sometimes devotees don't want to get implicated in the karma. The beggars, devotees are hesitant to give a donation. They might use it for alcohol or intoxication, or they might be part of some, you know, gang or something. There's a word for it. Anyway. Business. Syndicate. Yeah, sometimes there's like a mafia guy sending the children beggars out and collecting all the money for themselves. So devotees have this conflicted way of, you know, engaging with compassion. We know it's, you know, the ideal quality. We're afraid of getting caught up in the karma. And after all, real compassion is preaching the holy name. And yet, when we preach, we can also be quite uncompassionate or inconsiderate in the way we present the holy name or even deal with our own family members or community members. Does anyone have any thoughts or questions or comments at this stage? Something come into your mind?
Just when preaching doesn't have the full effect that's desired, a lot of the so-called, perhaps because they don't have the absolute truth, you think that the Christian civilized, the Christian preaching in foreign lands, they convert to sort of false compassion. They're saying we're opening schools and hospitals. The idea is to get you to follow their path.
Right.
I just had that thought as you were sharing.
Yeah, okay. So Paramakaruna is introducing an idea of false compassion. So we've had this thing here where, you know, for Bharat Maharaj and Sobari and Arjuna, compassion was a distraction or a fall down or impurity. And now we have this other thing that Parma is introducing where you're using compassion manipulatively. Compassion is being used manipulatively to take advantage of people. Right, is that the idea you're...
Ultimately, yes. And usually because of their situation, it's also combined with some sort of economic benefit to be gained, isn't it? That it's not just for the church. There seems to be some dynamic from the imperial body,
right,
the government, wherever they're coming from.
Okay, so a lot of people caught up. You know, we had the syndicate with the beggars, but then there's a more sophisticated network here of collecting donations in the name of compassion. We might have some memory of that in our history as well. I know in Auckland we had a INDRA, the International Drug Rehabilitation Association, that Yasso set up. Devotees used to collect for INDRA. Remember INDRA? Everybody's had little, you know, ID cards. INDRA. I'm from INDRA, collecting donations here. We've got an international drug rehabilitation program going.
When I was in England, I came across a guy, not this guy, but he had a board.
Yeah.
And it was a student's campaign for anti-militarism.
Okay.
C-A-M. Not really.
Scam.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go from this idea that compassion is something good and something to be, you know, something that's always positive and beneficial, to this complexity now. From being something so ideal and so virtuous, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, yes, Sumuk.
I hope I'm not
going
to take off the subject, but just then when you said that, how...
Yeah. Yeah.
So recently we were reading Lake Majuna by Ujjama by Andrew Maharaj and Dabhivasi Muni.
Can everyone hear Samukhi? No, can you speak a bit louder?
But that's quite loud. Quite a compliment. Recently we were reading about Andrew Maharaj being offended by Dabhivasi Muni.
Yeah.
And you were previously saying that compassion is actually, it's a spiritual quality.
Yeah.
Complex. It's something virtuous and then it's becoming complex.
Yeah.
And when we were reading that past time, I always wanted to ask somebody, but I never stayed long enough in class, that, you know, we're hearing all about how Ambarish Maharaj was a great Vaishnava and he was offended by Dabhivasi Muni. But then, you know, I was just wondering how much the most mature nature affects somebody's compassion. So you might have a family of children, or let's say a teacher in a class. So in a class situation, you've got a group of different personalities. You actually have different expectations.
Hmm.
Like a child A that's generally placid and nice and kind.
Yep.
You know, they hit child D, it would be like, oh my gosh. But then, you know, child C, that's generally, it's a little bit passionate,
yeah,
a little bit impulsive.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Does, you know, it's forced by the most mature nature to do something.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering how it is that, you know, so in our society and amongst each other, amongst our family, husbands, wives, God, brothers, God, sisters, ISKCON, we're all different.
Yep.
You know, we're all different. So
We're figuring that out.
Yeah. So then, individuality. You know, you're talking about compassion. So sometimes it seems that people, if somebody does something that's, you know, spiritually, socially unacceptable, it's like they totally demonize that person in the name of, you know, that's, you know, not our principle, that's not this, that's not that.
Yep.
Without taking into account what may be going on. And so therefore, you know, they feel very justified.
Yes.
Very justified. And but actually we're all individuals and under different, you know, modes, different desires. So, you know, to really feel compassion, to infiltrate into, to really deal compassionately with each other, it seems that you have to have a very broad, be very broad-minded and take into a lot of factors, take into account a lot of factors.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much for bringing that in, Sumukhi. Sumukhi has introduced this idea that, you know, we're dealing with all different types of devotees and not, yeah, devotees who know that they're devotees and those who don't know that they're devotees. So it's all different types of living entities with all different types of karma. And it seems to be, you're saying, that we need to share Krishna consciousness and support support somebody's Krishna consciousness according to the advancement or the needs of the individual, and that's probably something we haven't done so much of as a society. Have I missed something, Jashila? You wanna? Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. So, can we think of any examples of a famous preacher from our scriptures who might do that? Prabhupada? Yeah, of course. Prabhupada's the premier example. Someone a little more ancient? I beg your pardon? Lord Chaitanya? Yeah, so these are great examples. I was thinking of Narada Muni. Narada Muni had somebody that he was sharing Krishna consciousness with, and this guy was a murderer, a dacoit, a thief, you know, a highwayman or, you know, a highway robber. So what was Narada Muni's approach with him? Sinner, evil, you know, where's the police? Lock him up. Narada Muni's approach with him was, please chant the holy name of Lord Ram. And he's like, no way, I'm not going to be doing that. Narada Muni figured out, according to this person's, you know, level of, you know, sinfulness and their nature and mentality, we have to find some way to help them. So that's Narada Muni's great compassion. He's not banging him over the head. Say Ram, otherwise, you know, you go to hell. You think you're happy, you're actually not happy. You're just suffering, you're doing... Narada Muni found a way for this highwayman, Valmiki, according to his nature, and said, you know, very clever. So you can't say Ram, how about say Mara? We know the story. So Valmiki, Mara, death, I can say that. I'm all about death. And so he started to chant, Mara, 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 Mara. We know that story. And so he ended up chanting the holy name, becoming purified, and writing one of our great scriptures, the Ramayana, yeah, celebrated by all people as the most, you know, purifying of literature. It was written by this murderer, thief. We can be quite, you know, quick to judge people, and even our devotees, when they make a mistake, we want them punished. And generally the punishment that we give is no service for you. You can't do any service. Well, service is the thing that purifies. Right? Service purifies us of our conditioned nature. And the very thing that will purify is the thing that often gets restricted. Another example with Narada Muni. Nriga? Mrigari. Mrigari the hunter. So this is a classic example. I mean, they're both classic examples, but this one particularly. We're all about four regulative principles. And, you know, sometimes in the opening conversation with people, we follow four, you know, we're Hare Krishnas, we follow four rules. No meat, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. What do any of them have to do with bhakti? Actually, none of them are activities of bhakti. They're not direct angas of bhakti. Chanting Hare Krishna is directly bhakti. Seeing the deity is bhakti. Hearing or touching or reading Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, that's bhakti. And these things, they are supportive. They're facilitative. But we present, often we present them as our, you know, opening introduction and isolating ourselves from our audience. And then we get around to telling them about Hare Krishna as a secondary, you know, secondary point. Whereas Hare Krishna, that's what will purify the heart and will lead to all these other, you know, as we become purified, then those, you know, good qualities of truthfulness, compassion, self-control and cleanliness will also come from there. That's how Prabhupada preached in 1965 to the hippies. It was all about chant Hare Krishna. Later on, he introduced the lesser principles that support our chanting, that give potency. Yeah, they support our chanting. So with Magrari, Narada Muni's telling Magrari, you know, you're hunting, and you're, what was Magrari's program? Did he would half kill the animals. Magrari's thing was to half kill the animals, and he enjoyed seeing them writhing in pain. So Narada Muni's compassion here, Narada Muni's compassion, he feels great sorrow, and he feels pain in his own heart, seeing what, you know, what awaits Magrari. He feels compassion for those animals, he feels compassion for Magrari, and he preaches with compassion, and he says, Magrari, please do one thing for me. Can you kill the animals completely? Deviation. Heresy. Narada Muni preaching animal slaughter. Right? That's what he was preaching. Please, please kill those animals completely. Don't half kill them. That was Narada Muni's approach for Magrari, as Samukhi's pointed out. You know, different levels, different mentalities. Try to make, you know, the teaching appropriate to that individual. So you can have a blanket policy that we try to fit onto all people, but it's very impersonal, and it will, yeah, most people won't fit within your policy. But if we try to understand, if we preach with compassion, then we try to figure out how to give Krishna consciousness to that individual according to their conditioned nature and their level of awakening or purification. What are some contemporary ways that might apply? Yeah, Narada Muni's example might apply within our society or within society in general. Yes, Krishnendra Prabhu. Yeah, very, very contentious issue in modern society, because increasingly, gay relationships are accepted, and then in the Hare Krishna movement, it's not authorized. It's not authorized in our scriptures. It's not authorized in the examples of any of our acharyas. How do you deal with that question? So it's something for us to explore. Can they be devotees? Can they be accepted? Could they be initiated? Those are issues. We just had Bhakti True Maharaj with us in Sydney, and he was staying with a couple who have been in a gay relationship for the past 10 years. You had a point?
No, Prabhu just told before me.
Oh, okay, he took those words.
Uh-huh. Even yeah. I think Dinabandhu Prabhu recently, they went to Indian prison and saw some photo on Facebook.
Right.
And
yeah.
It's very interesting to see the reaction of these Indian prisoners.
Yeah.
Crying and
right. Yeah.
Enjoying listening to Krishna.
Yes. Yeah. So, now, who's feeling uncomfortable? Am I advocating like some, you know, sentimental wishy-washy? Is this a deviation? Is this, you know, Prabhupada taught a strict standard and are we, you know, watering down? These are valid concerns. These are valid concerns in the Hare Krishna movement. Are we watering down Prabhupada's teaching? Valid concerns in a society of devotees where you have devotees at different levels, where you have your own children. They don't want to follow the same principles or the same standards as you. Do we water it down? Do we Do we hold righteously to our principles and our values? Yeah. Ah. It's not a if or one or the other.
Huh?
Yeah. Did everyone hear what Shrikari Mataji said? She said, do both. And that is, you hold the standard that Prabhupada gave, the principles that Prabhupada gave, the standard that we have enshrined in Shastra. And that is the standard. At the same time, you encourage devotees to apply as much as they can, where they can, when they can, according to their level of realization and purification. Anyone want to expand upon that? How would you do that?
Well, in a sense, then you're giving the person an ideal and a goal to achieve. So they should be thankful that there is that goal, and we have to bring them along according to their level, according to their willingness to achieve that goal. Because we can ask them from time to time, how you're going with it, are you desiring to step up a little, would this be something for you, this particular ideal of giving up that?
Yeah.
You know, and question them and counsel them along and encourage them.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you, Parma. Parma Kuran is giving us some insight on how to apply that. One thing that I would like to add is that we should be looking in the mirror here and applying it to ourselves as well. So rather than carrying our own, so compassion begins with the self, actually. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes that point. Starts with the self, it, you know, it goes on to your family, and then from your family to your community, greater society. And he's saying, according to the level of advancement, the devotee, then their compassion will expand, or even the non-devotee, as they become more purified. From the self, to family, to community, to society, to humanity, to all living entities.
It still begs the question, and pardon me, I'm looking for interrupting there, that how you got angry, because I concur with how that I didn't remember when I was trying to talk. Small group of devotees, how I got angry would come.
Yeah. Yeah, so you had a similar experience.
I had a similar experience, and it begs the question then how far
yeah.
you would tolerate.
Yeah, so very good. And that really speaks to what I was just saying about you need to begin with being compassionate to yourself. And yeah, okay. So when we're compassionate with ourselves, it means we accept there's the goal, there's the ideal. You were mentioning the goal, the ideal. There's the standard. It's prema bhakti. We're not there. So, you know, we can judge ourselves, and we often do. And others, devotees, will have a right to judge us as well. But if we understand there's the goal, there's the ideal, here's where I am, and to accept that. And that's what I'm able to do now. And this is a lifetime project that I've embarked upon. And for the time being, I'm going to be I'm not making a philosophy. I'm not saying it's all right to not follow all the principles or stand whatever it is. I'm not making a philosophy of it. I understand at my stage of life and my level of spiritual realization, this is where I am. I'm not saying that, you know, I can't be changed or it's my, you know, eternal nature or dharma, but it is something that I'm working toward. I'm working towards that goal, and I'm accepting that in myself. And when I can accept that in myself, then I'll be less defensive and less guilty and angry, and much more apt or able to accept it in others as well, and not have to feel defensive.
So then going back to when you were feeling angry, you weren't in perspective to where you were at.
Possibly I was fearful. So when we are trying to practice at a very high level and we're fearful of not being able to, then we might become very angry and resentful towards others that don't
support,
that aren't making the struggle.
You almost feel you want them to support you.
Yes. Yeah, they're letting you down. They're letting the team down. And so there's an anger towards them. And, you know, you're making all of this great endeavor and struggle, and you're defensive to anyone that compromises or threatens that struggle.
Then, but you still want to be part of the team. You still want to be part of the team. You don't want to lose team members.
No, this way we're going to make the team much bigger. Yes,
in that context, I would like to share that we feel anger and, you know, the pride and everything before the fall, right?
Yeah.
So then it's because we have forgotten how we were fallen and how were we given compassion.
Yes.
So that's very much because I was a mother before.
Yeah.
And I'm always angry with my eldest son because he was very good at my work. Mm. When I became here, he would just sleep.
Uh-huh.
But he would listen to questions. But then I said, why won't you go to the temple, you know, serve and do this and do that? But still, as you said, you know, if I have forgotten my own fallenness, then that's where I become defensive and angry.
Yeah.
But if I'm always reflective, because I do my sin in the bhakti, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I do my rounds properly.
Yeah.
Then I come to terms with my own self, with my own fallenness. And that's where charity and compassion begins.
It begins at home.
Yeah, that I, who am I? Why not give compassion when I was given compassion?
Mm.
So on Facebook, I shared with my friends, I said, I don't give compassion because I'm compassionate. I gave compassion because I was given compassion.
Mm. Very nice. So that's Krishna's compassion that you're giving. Yeah. We'll come to you in a second, Sumukhi. Oh, did you have...
Dinabhati.
Yeah. Right, yes. And so it requires a humility, actually. Compassion towards yourself requires humility. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that when with a lowly heart will I go out to spread the divine command? Or as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, one should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer respects to others, then one can chant constantly. And so, humility, compassion towards oneself, it couples with humility, and then we can offer that to others. And our preaching can be, or our sharing of Krishna consciousness can be a supporting of others in Krishna consciousness.
In humility, one can think, I'm not qualified to preach, and it's quite a different thing to be compassionate.
Yeah, that's another... another discussion. There's so many ways to preach.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyone have any final comments, or do you have something more? Yeah.
I was just thinking that sometimes I wonder if, like, is ISKCON sort of scared that if everybody doesn't follow in a certain way, the whole movement's going to disintegrate? Because I always think like this, that there's all different natured people.
Yeah.
There's always going to be restraint devotees. They're going to come generation after generation, they're going to kind of put all the T's, you know, mark all the T's, and they're going to be Mangalashi, and they're going to be, you're going to kind of stereotype what we're all sort of aiming towards. So therefore, sometimes it seems like recently when my guru wasn't acting as a guru anymore, and then so of course initially I think, oh my God, what's my position? I'm just like, you know, what's going to happen if I leave my body and I don't have my guru and I'm on the shadow by path? And you know, I'm thinking so many things, like how am I going to chant Hare Krishna, and you know, why has this happened? So and, you know, it's just like shell shock.
Yeah.
But then now I see it, the most amazing thing as the year goes by, that actually Krishna's still looking after me.
Mm.
So, you know, and of course, I'm not, you know, of course I can go to Kumbhyan next year, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that actually, it seems like a lot of people could use the word fear.
Yep.
It's so fearful that if this person here is not acting the way he or she should,
yeah.
So therefore we've all like, we've all got to pretend we're all really, you know, we're all really advanced, and you know, and if we don't, you know, sort of like don't pretend we are, then you know, everything's going to go to custard. But it seems that Krishna, at different times in all of our lives, at different times in all of our lives,
if we're lucky,
yeah, if we're lucky, he you feel empowered, you feel connected,
yeah.
And you know, sometimes in your life you don't feel connected and you face desires, you know. So
yeah.
I just think it's always going to happen like that.
It will, yeah. It absolutely will.
You know, somebody who's low now is going to be high. Maybe it's just like next month, like, and so.
And also we don't know, you know, where someone is in their relationship with Krishna. They may appear to be away for a long time, but they might be carrying on for, yeah. So whatever they're going through and whatever they're going through with Krishna, we don't know what
that's all about. Yeah, because I had this, once there was a young, she was a girl called Lynn, it was quite a few years ago, and she really wanted to go and see the deities, and she had jeans on. So she said to me, oh, you know, I can't go and see the deities because I've got jeans on. I said, well, you know, you should just go and see them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can go and see the deities, and then, but people are scared that if one person comes to the temple with jeans on, that all the Mataji's are going to start wearing jeans to Mongolia, but it's just not going to happen. Or if I don't come to Mongolia at the moment, you know. I'm not coming to Mongolia. That means everybody in the whole community is not going to come to Mongolia.
It's a great point you're making. And as an ISKCON manager in the past, now I don't have any positions, but as a past, when I held management positions, I recognized in the same time that I was having this reflection about anger and compassion, I also noticed I had a desire to control. So I wanted everyone to be at a high standard, but I wanted everyone to be at a standard according to my standard and to conform and be the same and have like a, you know, an army of Vaishnava Sangatan soldiers. And so then those that don't fit in there, they become enemies. And these ones are friends. And you know, those ones are useless. And, you know, they make you angry. And so our desire, our controlling propensity very much gets in the way. And as preachers, we can preach with the desire. Parama Karuna started this, you know, the example with the Christians using compassion that way. We can use preaching to control others and to build spiritual empires. And it's not about compassion at all. You know, there is a sense, you know, compassion is the nature, there is, you know, it's mixed. But, you know, there's empire building and, you know, fame and glory and all of that. And we're using compassion, the preaching, to do that, to control others, give them Krishna and purify them and take them back to Godhead. But there's all that other stuff going on. And so when people don't fit to the mold, it can be very threatening. Yes, Jai Srila Prabhu?
Just to throw another little side.
Yeah.
We just quoted Lord Chaitanya's Siddhartha.
Yeah.
And there's a word, sometimes it's included in that, and sometimes it's excluded. And that's the point I'm going to make to discuss.
Sure.
And it says, always ready to offer respect to others.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's to all others. So the point I'm going to just bring out is we try hard to respect all those people.
Right.
And the ants, and the good karma ant.
Right.
And you go on from there. And you some devotees. you just shut them off. You shut it out, and it doesn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just really focus on the ones you can respect, and look after the ants and the cows. All the ants. It's just good to 170,000.
Right.
So how can we become compassionate there to ourselves
Thanks. At the end of the discussion. we don't have the answers for all questions, even in this group, but it's great to begin the discussion. So thank you for bringing that up. One thing that I think about as you raise that is when people are very different to us, it's, easy to relate to them and, be friends on good terms with them because they're very different. They're a different religion. But when they're the same religion, but slight different line or whatever, different.
The differences are outside of fine differences.
Inside. They're too similar to us. And we're afraid of being seen as the same when we actually want to emphasize our differences. And so we look for them. So anytime a fault arises or whatever, we're very quick to point it out because then we can show the difference between us and them. That's a beginning to that discussion, but we need to finish here.
Is it a fear that you have, or people will have, just to have that differentiation between groups or devotees, just that you can actually...
Yeah, there does tend to be that kind of a fear.
You might lose the control, maybe control is one thing. Or
another, yes, definitely a significant factor there. Thank you all very much for this opportunity to share with you and discuss with you, and that you could also share your insights and realizations. Let us end by offering our humble obeisances to one another and with a prayer that we can be more compassionate in our dealings with all other living entities, Vaishnavas, non-Vaishnavas, and all sentient beings.
Good job.